This episode of the UAV Digest is sponsored by GoEngineer, provider of design, engineering, and 3D printing solutions for the aerospace and unmanned vehicles industries. To learn more, visit the UAVDigest.com/GoEngineer. You're listening to episode 70 of the UAV Digest. I'm Max Flight in Hartford, Connecticut.
And I'm David Vanderhoof in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. Hey, Max.
Hi, David. How are you?
I'm good. We're getting ready for, as we record this on Wednesday night, a little earlier than our normal, the house is being filled with sweet potato pies and baking for the Thanksgiving holiday that's coming up tomorrow.
That's right. We'll release this on Friday, our usual time, just to be consistent. But we wanted to make sure that all of you listening had your dose of the UAV Digest for this week, even though it's the Thanksgiving holiday week here in the U.S.
But boy, do we got a lot to talk about. We've got FAA expectations. We've got our This Week in Regulations, Kiwi style. We've got Jurassic drones, poachers busted by small UASs, opinion pieces about UAVs versus geese, drones, Ferguson, and privacy, just in time for Christmas, GoPro wants in the UAV market, and a video of the week. So I guess we better get started. 30 minutes runs quick. Well, our first story is from the Wall Street Journal. Drone flights face FAA hit. Wall Street Journal reports that, quote, people familiar with the rulemaking process, unquote, are talking about what we can expect from FAA for small UASs. And it doesn't sound like a lot of people are going to be very happy with it.
No, it doesn't. Now, we should probably mention that, as David mentioned, these are unnamed people that are feeding information to the Wall Street Journal. And so it's kind of, it can be kind of dicey to base anything on these kinds of speculative reports. But hey, this is the Wall Street Journal. And so I'm sure the sources are credible. But some of the word that's coming through, again, this relates to the NPRM for small UAS that the FAA says will still be released before the end of this year. One of the aspects of that is that they intend to lump all small UASs under 55 pounds under the same regulations. No grades or classes of UAS under that 55 pounds. So some people were hoping, for example, that small, maybe 2-3 pound UAVs would not be subject to these regulations, whatever they turn out to be. So that's kind of an interesting one. But there are some others as well.
This is a big one. Require small UAS operators to have a manned flight pilot's license.
Yeah, that's
going to be interesting. You figure how many hours you need to solo and get your license. They're going to do a serious backpedaling. I mean, it's going to be a binge for aviation schools, but we probably won't have a pilot shortage if people actually do it. But I think people are going to just fly them anyway and avoid that little issue.
I hope this is not the way it works out. I mean, I think that I personally was expecting that there would be some kind of pilot certificate, at least for the larger small UAS category. But to require a manned flight pilot's license, I mean, that's a lot of work. It's a lot of time. And most importantly, that's a huge expense.
Money.
Yeah. And okay, so you don't want to put a price on safety in the airspace, but that just seems like it's going a little bit farther than maybe we need to. And there are a few other items in this report. We see that flying would be limited to daytime hours below 400 feet and in line of sight. So that's pretty much kind of consistent, I think, with what people expected.
So again, it's going to come out before the end of the year, which means as we record this in late November, that's about 4 weeks left. And then there's going to be a public comment period. Usually it's 90 days for these things. Then we have 1 to 2 years to finalize it after the public comment period. So while it's coming out in December, we're not going to see anything till now we're talking 2017.
Yeah, we'll see what the U.S. Congress has to say about that. They may not like that too much. But we do know from this article that the FAA's proposal is being circulated within the government. The White House Office of Management and Budget is taking a look at it. Some others as well, the Pentagon and law enforcement agencies. Don't know which ones, if those are federal or otherwise. But the reaction is kind of as you would expect. We see a quote from Michael Drobak. He's the executive director of the Small UAV Coalition. And he was quoted as saying, "I feel like there's a colossal mess coming." And also he said that the rule is going to be, quote, "so divorced from the technology and the aspirations of this industry that we're going to see a loud rejection." Well, that 90-day comment period that you mentioned, David, I don't think that's going to be a very quiet period of time.
No, and when it does occur, I recommend everybody to take a few minutes and write serious comments. We've talked about this on commenting on Airplane Geeks when stuff has come up, and you don't have to be nasty, you don't have to be snarky, but you have to be realistic. And if we're going to get realistic rules, we need to have calm level heads to, and I sound like I'm talking about Ferguson, Missouri right now, but right. Calm level heads to prevail. So we know it's coming. Our heads, our eyes are wide open, and it's going to take time and we'll get it right.
And when the NPRM comes out, the Notice of Proposed Rulemaking, we'll have some information for you on just exactly where you can go to submit comments and how you can do that. And I think we'll probably also offer some additional advice as to how to effectively comment on, well, this issue or any issue of this sort. So hopefully that'll be soon. Like you say, David, the end of the year is rapidly approaching.
But, and the other thing we could say is, I know we have FAA listeners to this show. Maybe after the NPRM comes out, we can get someone on to explain their views. Hint, hint, hint to those listeners that have FAA in their email addresses.
All right. Well, moving on, David, we see that New Zealand is proceeding also kind of down a similar path, but maybe one that's not so lengthy.
Yeah, they're... proposed rulemaking for unmanned aerial vehicles will be out on December 4th, and that's from the CAA, their Civil Aviation Authority. And there's no details what the proposal will contain, but the CAA has input from UAVNZ, an industry group, and Callaghan Innovation, and we'll have links to those show notes, that promotes economic progress for New Zealand. So they're looking at this a little differently. They're looking at it as economic growth. And they're looking for certification, not necessarily licensing for high-risk UAVs. So while everyone agrees that there has to be some sort of certificate, it looks like the FAA is going to the extreme where we've already seen other nations like Canada and possibly New Zealand taking a lower route. It's not necessarily the same as operating a manned aircraft, despite what our friends Rob thinks.
Now the FAA has, we understand, has not been developing the proposal in a complete vacuum, right? We've heard from other folks like some of the standards groups and so forth. They have had input from other organizations. But what New Zealand seems to be doing is going farther than that. With these two groups participating in developing the proposed rules, it sounds like there's more cooperation maybe with other interests. The FAA seems to have been taking a more of a, give us your input and then we'll go off and propose the regulation. So we'll see how that works out.
So the next story is interesting. I don't know how to take this story because it starts off very interesting if, when you read the article, and then it goes kind of dark. This was from Motherboard. NASA is working on creating bioengineered drones made of mushrooms and bacteria. We got this from listener Chris. NASA's trying to build a biological UAV where basically the fuselage or the chassis is a, quote, mycelium-based chassis for a biological drone. Your take on this, Max?
Well, when you read the headline, I mean, you have to read the article because we know what could this possibly be all about. And the fact that NASA is supporting this project gives it some, well, maybe extra credibility. The motivation for doing this, I mean, it really wasn't exactly, well, I don't know what I thought the motivation for this would be. But what they say is that, think about it. If you think about UAVs, a lot of applications, you've got a lot of sensors on the aircraft. And these require, well, they require electrical power. And, of course, battery power is often at a premium on UAVs. They also weigh something. And here again, for small UAS, the weight of the sensors that you're carrying around is an issue. Well, what they're doing is they're saying that, guess what? There's a way that we can create sensors that are very lightweight and require no electrical energy. And these are these biological sensors. There's a quote in here. It says, a major limitation of current research with UAVs is the size and high power consumption of analytical instruments, which require bulky electrical components and large fuselages to support their weight. And furthermore, by moving these functions into cells with biosensing capabilities, for example, a series of cells engineered to report GFP, green fluorescent protein, when conditions exceed a certain threshold concentration, that these problems of scale can be avoided. This is kind of, it's sci-fi. It's fascinating, though.
It's creepy.
It's creepy.
Because further down the article, they talk about one of the disadvantages of using biologicals is they change. So what happens if you're flying your biological UAV sensor and you're studying a lake and you crash that UAV and suddenly you have a biological UAV that has got a pervasive hostile algae or bacteria that suddenly takes over the lake? It's really kind of creepy. So it acts as an invasive species. The other part about it is they've got to make sure that they don't change, you know. So you've got these cells that are supposed to report GFP, and suddenly over time they've changed and now they're reporting blue fluorescent protein. I call this article Jurassic Drone because it's Jurassic Park. It's like, yeah, let's create a dinosaur out of DNA. And, oh, wait a minute. These are living organisms in change. So,
yeah.
This is one of those sci-fi things that sort of goes, exactly. Okay, this could go really dark really quickly.
That's right. Yeah, they could make a movie out of this for sure. It does strike me, though, is another example of the interesting kinds of research that has been coming out and that needs to come out to support this industry, the UAV industry. And while, as we mentioned, the motivation is of a certain type for this project, this sounds like basic research that could be applied to, you know, a lot of other different areas as well. So it's sort of a fallout maybe from UAV. So it's fascinating. And, you know, even if it doesn't result in a specific product or specific capability, like I say, I think the basic research being done could have applicability in other areas. So we'll have to watch this one.
Yeah. Plus, it gave us something to talk about for 7 minutes.
I know. All right. Poachers. All right, well, what about poachers, David?
Well, I was going to say, let's move on from microbiology to large biology. This was from shadowview.org, which is a foundation that is designed to prevent people from poaching, in this case, rhinos. And we've talked about this over time, that UAVs have been used as a observation platform for poachers to catch them. And ShadowView used information from a drone to direct local rangers to poachers. And unfortunately, during the firefight, the rangers actually did kill one of the poachers, but they prevented the greater Kruger area in South Africa from being poached rhinos because rhinos are becoming a rapidly extinct species.
Yeah, poaching is a big problem for that reason. And the press release indicates that they believe this is the first time that drones have been used specifically for this purpose, given the fact that the poachers were armed and there was a firefight. I mean, that indicates sort of the magnitude of this problem and the danger of it. So it's very interesting that ShadowView, they use unmanned aerial support of various kinds and different technologies to help wildlife and humans in need, they say. So it's not just strictly poaching that they're focused on, but I think that's a big part of it. It's an interesting website. We'll put links in the show notes, but it's shadowview.org, which is also their Twitter handle if you'd like to follow them. So a very interesting story that was sent to us by Dr. Dirk. So we want to thank Dirk for sending that in.
The next one, since I found this article, I've been waiting for you to hear Mr. Engine Engineer. And that is from Aviation Week. Is the small UAV threat to airliners overrated? And it's a well-balanced and article on maybe our pilot friends are a little too jumpy about ingesting a UAV into an engine.
Yeah, this is an interesting sort of exploration of the concept that, again, as you say, David, people are worried, pilots are worried about UAVs interfering with aircraft and even striking them. And in the article, they talk about, what about birds? You know, there's a lot more birds up there than UAVs flying around, and that there are regulations, there are requirements for survivability of bird strikes, both for the fuselage and for the engines. Now, for airframe and windscreen survivability, the requirement is that 4-pound birds don't significantly damage the airframe or the windscreen. There's an 8-pound requirement for the empennage, and as for engine ingestion of birds, it varies, but between 4 and 8 pounds is what you look for. But there's also a requirement for survivability against multiple birds, like a flock, that also apply. And manufacturers, airframe and engine manufacturers, test and have to certify that what they build can pass these requirements. So the question is, if they can survive birds, can't they survive smallish UAVs? Well, 8 pounds is kind of a low limit. Certainly, there are a lot of UAVs that are greater than 8 pounds, and the force goes up significantly as the weight does. So you could have issues. There's also the question of sort of the density. You know, what does a bird look like to the windscreen of an airliner as opposed to the metal and carbon fiber or the batteries and so forth on a UAV?
And batteries do go boom.
And batteries, the LiPo batteries can definitely go boom. So it's an interesting piece. It's interesting to kind of consider what points are being raised here. But I think in the end, I don't think we can just say that, UAVs are covered already under the requirements for bird strike survivability.
Right, but it does sort of imply that you could always up the regulations. But we know that even A320s, if they ingest enough birds, end up landing in the Hudson River. So
right. It's
still someone looking at it from a different perspective than drones kill. So we'll put it there. The next one was, right now we're having serious issues here in the United States over Ferguson, Missouri, which I'm sure is international news. Unfortunately, a policeman shot an 18-year-old man fatally. But what was interesting about this was I found out that the FAA has had several no-fly zones over the Ferguson area due to rioting that's occurred. The reason being is they don't want the press helicopters flying over the area for safety reasons. So, you know, you have people, unfortunately, shooting guns up in the air. You don't need a miracle, a golden bullet to come through a helicopter and take out a helicopter. So there's no fly zones. But isn't that unfortunately looking at First Amendment rights that people should have a right to fly over and videotape and tell people what's going on in the town? And they compared that incident to small UASs and the FAA sort of indiscriminately offering COAs to various people, and with really what the article implies is no rhyme or reason.
Yeah, and this article is from Slate.com. It's titled, Up in the Air, the Free Speech Problems Raised by Regulating Drones. And the author in this article is kind of questioning, the FAA, and is it an arbitrary restriction? But they also make the point that, you know, aircraft gather information, aircraft of various sorts, could be helicopters, could be whatever. But this information, it's often not accessible by other means. So if you regulate the ability of news gathering aircraft, then you are bringing in First Amendment issues to be addressed. And furthermore, if he says, the Wall Street Journal says that the regulations in the U.S. may take 1 or 2 years before they're actually implemented, that's an awful long time to hold up the press's ability to report the story and to use drones if that's the means by which they can gather the information. You know, we've talked about safety, David, in the past. Obviously, well, all the time. We talk about privacy issues all the time. And this is kind of introducing, another issue, the freedom of speech issue. And can you prevent people, should you prevent people from the ability to gather information with their quadcopter?
Yeah, it's another interesting article exploring, like the previous one, an aspect that we really haven't touched on. And it's nice to know that there are people out there now in the mainstream media. When we started this 70 episodes, I don't think we could say this, that people are looking at UAVs from a more rounded perspective. Mm. They're not negative. They're not firing missiles that, you know, I'd like to say that you and I have single-handedly converted the mass media over to that opinion, but
well, you know, when you read, that's an interesting point, David, because when you read some of the comments under these news articles, of course, you know what internet comments are like. They sort of span the spectrum from, you know, trolls to ridiculous to semi well thought out. But in these comments, you still do see a fair number of people who are clearly thinking about drones in that older context, in that firing, you know, missiles kind of a military application context, or the government spying on everybody kind of a context. You know, there still are people out there that haven't really yet had the opportunity to understand the value that these can bring to society. So I don't think our mission is concluded quite yet, David.
Oh, well, you know. Gee, here I thought we could do it in 70. It looks like it's going to be a 5-year mission.
I think you're right.
So, one last really quick story, and this is from the Wall Street Journal and Gizmodo. GoPro wants to make its own drones, which is, it makes me think that does that mean DJI is going to get into cameras?
Well, they kind of are. You know, you can buy a DJI with the camera as part of the package. So, this is GoPro saying, well, okay, you guys can make cameras. We can make multi-rotors as well.
So, I mean, they're going to be available for you to buy, Max and I, one late next year, just in time for Christmas 2015. And you have an interesting question about this, Max.
Well, I find myself wondering, where is GoPro getting the experts that will allow them to do this. I mean, you know, you have to do some, unless it's just going to be a repackaging, a rebranding of somebody else's hardware, if they're truly going to build their own, and I don't know for a fact that's what they have in mind, but if they are, they need engineers to develop the product. They need manufacturing people to line up the suppliers and do the manufacturing and assembly. You need a whole group of people that really need different skills than the HD video camera, the sport camera kind of expertise. So yeah, I don't know where they're coming from, but it's something obviously the GoPro has to consider, and we'll wait and see. This isn't necessarily guaranteeing success. They may have their sights set high on a product line, but let's see if they can deliver. We do understand that they're looking to create multi-rotor helicopters in the $500 to $1,000 range. So that's kind of square into DJI territory.
I was going to say, that sounds like they're targeting the DJIs. All right. Well, Max, we are rapidly running out of time. But one last story, and it's not a video of the week, but we do have photos of the week. Mashable put up the 2014 best drone photos, and they're really good photos, really kind of amazing shots taken by multicopters and quadcopters. So we'll have a link to that in the show notes. And lastly, we've got a video of the week, which is... it's hard to believe it's almost 30 years. It was 1986 when Chernobyl melted down in the former Soviet Union. And this is a high-def Vimeo video of what they call the Chernobyl exclusion area that was filmed earlier this year.
I think this generates kind of an emotional reaction when you watch this video, because obviously you take a facility like this, the Chernobyl power plant, that's sat there for 30 years. So there's a lot of deterioration, and the thing has fallen into, disrepair because of disuse. But in and amongst all of this sort of decaying buildings and structures are all these green trees and plant life that's grown up around. I mean, I guess sort of naively, I almost expected to see just a really desolate area. But it's this weird mixture of desolation and nature returning. It's very interesting.
Well, it just proves that life is going to be around after us. I mean, there was that television series, Life After, or The World After Humans, or whatever, where they talk about, they take the cities and they take out humans and then they see what happens over 200 years or whatever. But this is only 30 years, and it's kind of dystopian, but definitely worth a watch.
Yeah, it is. And I think it's, creating this video by a drone, by this, they used a DJI 800, I think, the S800 to film this. Much better idea than walking through the through the facility on foot. Maybe you're not even allowed to do that.
So on that note, we should probably wrap this show up. We'd like to thank our listeners and our patrons and our sponsors, since it's this time of year that we need to give thanks to those people like Go Engineer and our other sponsor,
UAV Propulsion Tech,
as well as our patrons. And Neil, your T-shirt will be out in the mail shortly. And of course, you can go to our website to find all of our show notes, which is theuavdigest.com. If you want a shortcut, this will be theuavdigest.com/70. You can find us on Twitter at UAV Digest, on Facebook at facebook.com/UAV Digest.
And of course, if you'd like to send us an email, we enjoy receiving those. You can send that to feedback@theuavdigest.com. Well, we actually do get quite a lot of email. We try to answer as many of them as we can. It's kind of difficult given the volumes, but know that if you don't hear back from us, that we at least read every one of them, both David and I do. You can also find us on iTunes if you'd like to subscribe there. We're also on Stitcher.com and basically any place that you can find podcasts. So if you use an Android device, you can find us in there as well. So if you have difficulty, if you can't find us other than on our website, let us know, write to us, and we'll help you get your own subscription going. It's always better to subscribe to this podcast because that way it shows up automatically and you don't miss any episodes.
And of course, you can get some swag, which is from Cafe Press, which is cafepress.com/theUAVDigest. And of course, if you'd like to help Max and I fund this little organization, you can go to patreon.com/theUAVDigest or go to theuavdigest.com and click the donate link. So with that, folks, we'd like to again say, and this time of year, it's appropriate to say thank you for listening and taking time out of your week to listen to Max and I bloviate about UAVs. So this is David in Philly.
And Max in Hartford.
Thank you for listening.
This episode has been sponsored by UAV Propulsion Tech, a provider of propulsion, servo, and rescue and recovery parachute solutions for the unmanned aerial vehicle market. For more information, check out www.uavpropulsiontech.com.